All right. Hopefully the cicadas aren't too loud for you guys.
I like that sound.
It's nice and soothing.
It is.
It's really loud out here. So they decided to set up a nest right up here in this tree behind me.
Oh,
so
great. Good.
Yeah, it's going to be excellent. I'll find those little shells all over my yard tomorrow. Yeah. So, all right. Well, we're live, so we'll go ahead and get started. Cool. Hey, welcome to the Killer Frogs, the podcast all about TCU athletics from the fans' point of view. This is episode 101. My name is Sean Fouché, and on tonight's panel, we have Ryan Zeller.
Hello, everybody.
We have Wes Phelan.
Hey, guys.
And Shannon Brazil.
Hey there, everybody.
Hey, we made it through that without any problems.
The cicadas are high.
we decided, you know, the first 100 episodes, we're going to change up the intro just ever so slightly, just kind of get through a little bit quicker, but... How's everybody's week going?
You know, so far so good. I've had my dear friend Gary Goles here, went to graduate school with my wife. He's been in town since Saturday. We've had a great time. Leaving tomorrow, I'm sad to say, but he'll be back. But we've had a great day. Today we went to a little winery here near Georgetown. I had some wine and some pretty good Mexican food. Now we're enjoying martinis and the Killer Frogs Hour. So,
cheers.
Very good. Way to class it up there, Wes.
You're
there
to class. Yeah. Well, you need to class on here.
So. And my week's been great. I my oldest is a senior now, and we're starting to look at colleges. And first college was TWU, which was fine. She's like, well, I feel like that's in daddy's range. She's like, they don't have a football team. So I was like, okay. And then so I was like, where are we visiting next Wednesday? Because we go to Wednesday. So she said, TCU. I'm like, okay, great.
So, get a scholarship.
My congratulations and my condolences.
So as we're there, you know, of course I'm wearing my TCU stuff, shirt, hat, you know, I'm a fisher, my wife's doing the same. So, you know, the people are like, we're gonna take it, you guys are alumni. We're like, yes, we are, you know. And so the guys are giving a tour, we're like, this, you know, we're enjoying ourselves. My daughter, she's like, you guys are having way more fun than I'm having, you know. We're in Frog Fountain and all that stuff, we're taking pictures and we're like,
you're probably pointing everything out and going, hey, remember back in the day?
We were saying back in the day that used to be there versus what's there now. And that's what we're saying. Like, this wasn't here, you know, 18 years ago. But they got to the part where it was 60,000 a year. And that's when I was like, you know, the part where we were talking about working hard and scholarships and, you know, why we're on you so hard. That's because of that price right there. Mm-hmm. Mommy and daddy can't afford 60 grand a year for you to go to school. So either we need to pick it up this year or we're going to be TWU. There's no football team. So
the great thing about going to a school without a football team is that she could still come Saturday to TCU and root on the
Frogs. Exactly what I told her. And Wes, I have three more girls, man. I can't listen. I'm trying to live a life after kids, you know, not being dead. I've been there, done that.
Yeah, I hear you,
brother. Wow. But anyway, things are going good. My other girls qualify for Junior Olympics over the weekend. And so, which is two. So hopefully, you know, we've got some scholarships coming from TCU at some point. But as of now, we're doing a lot of practicing, and those girls will be representing Texas and by the end of the month and nationals at Drake in Iowa. So cool. That'll be awesome.
Wow, girl.
Can't wait.
Good deal.
Ryan, how was your week?
So that's my week.
That was a good week.
Pretty good. I'm excited about this week with it being the 4th of July. I love this holiday. We've already gone fireworks shopping, loaded up two grocery carts full of fireworks. It's also Mike's 40th birthday on July 5th. So we'll be.
Well, you know, tell Mike I outrank him by 1 year. It's my 41st birthday on the 5th.
It's hard to say.
41st. Yeah. No, so.
See, I'm older than both of y'all. I'm 42 and a half now. This is my half month. So.
But we got the best birthday, man, because like, the fireworks are for us. Yeah, the fireworks are tonight. Happy birthday.
Very cool. We get a day off from work. I mean, what more could you ask for? So, we're looking forward. We took Thursday and Friday off from work. So, we got about a 5-day weekend coming up, which nothing gets better than that, unless a cool front came in, you know. But
that'd be nice.
I'll hold my breath for that.
I could use a cool front right now.
Yeah, you could.
Open the refrigerator door.
Yeah, not out here. Yeah. So we had a couple of things, a couple of questions that came across on YouTube. We tried to answer this one a couple of weeks ago. We had a viewer, Gary Conrad, ask us a quick question on YouTube. He said, you know, he's been watching us for a while, but he doesn't really know everybody's affiliation with TCU. You know, Shannon was just talking about how he went and did a visit with his daughter, and everyone's like, you must be alumni. Well, we're all alumni here on the show. And back on episode 99, the episode YouTube 8, Ryan West and I tried to answer this question. Unfortunately, that was the part YouTube 8. So we thought we'd revisit that here in episode 101, just kind of kick us off. So let's go ahead and get started. Wes, why don't you regale us with the story of your time at TCU and your affiliation with the school?
Well, my affiliation started in 1955, which dates me pretty well, you guys. But I actually went to see TCU play Alabama, and we lost. But that was my first time I've been around TCU at all. I went with my grandfather. And it's odd that I even ended up at TCU. I was all set to go to Indiana University. I had a roommate. I had a room assignment. I had a lot of family history up at Indiana. My uncle played football up there. Was an All-American. And I was just all gung-ho about Indiana. Then my mother just couldn't stand to see her baby leave home. So she talked me into staying home and going to TCU. Never regretted it. But that's when it all started. And I went there both degrees, I was on like the 18-year plan. No,
And what were your degrees in?
Yeah, I got a degree in mass communications. Back then they called it radio, television, and film. And I basically had a geology minor. And I basically got out of that. There were no jobs in radio television at that time because ESPN hadn't been created. Cable television you could only get if you're in the country and couldn't get an antenna to get the network stations and PBS and a couple of UHF stations. So there were really no opportunities out there. I was telling Gary at dinner tonight, I got on a call one Friday afternoon from a radio station in Amarillo. He said, can you start tomorrow afternoon? We need a nighttime DJ here. I said, well, I don't really think I have a radio voice at all. I think I've got a cruddy voice. But anyway, this guy was ready to hire me sight unseen over the phone. And I said, I don't have a place to stay. Oh, we got a cot in the back of the station. You can just sleep back there. And I said, I'm going to pass on this. Anyway, I basically started about a week later, went to summer school, got my geology degree. And that's what my degrees are in, right? Mass communications, or at the time, radio, television, film, and then and geology. So, you know, having seen that first football game with TCU back in 1955, I became a fan and started going to all the games that I could, went to lots of baseball, lots of everything. I actually saw Jamie Dixon hit that famous shot against Texas, that three-pointer from midcourt. Mm. I was there, folks.
That's awesome.
I was there. And so anyway, it's been a love affair ever since. That's been my affiliation with them. And my wife got her doctorate there at TCU. We got married, and I talked her into going to TCU. She had an opportunity to go to Rice, which would have been, for what she does, a step up. But I said, Houston, that sucks down there. Stay in Fort Worth. So anyway, she got her PhD, and that's where we met Gary. And, you know, it's just so I've always been around the school. What can I say?
Well, it's a great story. And speaking of witnessing historic athletic events for TCU, let's move to Shannon, Brazil.
Oh, yeah.
Because Shannon was part of that historic football class that kind of kicked us off where we are today. So, Shannon, why don't you, for those people who maybe the millennials and the younger alumni who don't quite know exactly –
getting up what there, right?
Class's contribution is to the history of TCU. Why don't you let the people know?
Gotcha. Yeah. I came in 97, and you know, like my man Wes said before, I had no desires to go to TCU. I mean, the program was terrible and had been worth anything for years. And so, with me being one of the top recruits come out of the DFW area, I thought I was going to Miami. But those things didn't work out for whatever reasons. My choices got dwindled down to people giving me their word. And Pat Sullivan told me he would wait as long as it took for me to, you know, get my test pass and all those kind of things. So I started taking them late in the game. And that meant a lot to me. So that's what landed me over with a visit with TCU and end up loving the campus. And the first thing they showed us was the girls sunbathing out there. So that was interesting. That's my first thought.
Drove you past the beach.
Right past the beach. And I was like, slow up.
It really was. Yeah. We're giving a false. It was a tiny hill between Shirley and another dorm. And it was just a hill, but all of the girls every day. It was awesome.
Hey,
location.
However you want to imagine the beach or whatever they called it, that's I'll leave that up to you. But
there was sand or water or anything like that. No.
Hey,
you didn't go out there laying around in a bikini.
Don't ruin it. It was a beach to me that day. So, anyways, I get there and our class, we go 1-10 that year, and but we always knew that we were in those games, and you know, we along the way with losing, we were building something. We were building something special, but we didn't know it. We just knew our record reflect 1-10. And that one victory came against SMU, which was our rival at the time. And we celebrated like we had won, you know, the national title, because we tore down goalposts and all that stuff. So that was a big game. We
prevented the Mustangs from going to a bowl game because of that.
Mm-hmm. On top of that, you're right, we did that. So that was awesome. But from that season, we put something together that offseason and got some new coaches in there. Gary Patterson, Coach Franchoni, and the rest. We just took it one game at a time, and we're able to go to a bowl game, win six games, get into a bowl game. As we were talking about, playing in the Sun Bowl against USC, which no one gave us a chance in hell. Mm-hmm. And they disrespected us. Matter of fact, we knew we could do it, but at some point, once we got there and saw them, life sunk in, the truth sunk in, like, oh, do we have a chance against these guys, right? They were just so much bigger than us. They looked like – it's like when you step off a bus, there's in a movie scene, there's this little put-together team, then there's this, like, team of gods, right? And so that's how it looked. But here's the problem, which was on them. They disrespected us the whole week. You know, literally, we just got tired of hearing it, and up until the point where – game day, we got into a couple altercations at some of the events that we had to do together. And at some point, it's like, okay, we put our pants on just like they do, and they should have let sleeping dogs lie. But now they crossed the line, and so
they actually acted insulted that they had to play TCU.
Yeah, like yeah, we get it. They had first five rounders and all that stuff. We get it. You know, Carson Palmer, the quarterback, and all that crap. But you're not. We've been a bunch of dog fights, and I think that all that 1-10 and everything, all the goals we made was perfect for the moment that we said, screw it. You disrespected us and pushed us to a point where we've got to fight back. And once we made up in our minds that we're about to go out there and kick the living crap out of these guys, before we knew it, it was 21-0 at halftime.
You know, how many
– and so
because the announcers on television just raving about Carson Palmer and Chris Clyburn. How many times did you put Carson Palmer on his butt? I mean, you sacked him five times, didn't you?
I'm going to tell you, it seemed like a lot, but here's the deal. We didn't really recognize, you know, we didn't care about him, and I didn't really, the crazy part about it, we were so zoned in. For me, it took me a while to even know who we just played and what just happened. The only one they were raving about is the linebacker who was going first round, but we chopped wood all day with that dude, and by the third quarter, he was tapping himself out. I guess he got to thinking about his money. He kept saying, I'm a first rounder. And the way these guys are chop blocking me, I better get out of here before I get hurt. Or else, you know, I'm going to put my money in jeopardy. So he tapped out. But so we went on to win that game. And from that point, we won, you know, championship, won rings, got LT started blowing up. Our defense started being ranked the top our last 2 years. I think we're in the top five our junior year. And by the senior year, we were the total defense, the number one defense in the country on top of LT. Doing what he did. And from that point, TCU's been what it's been. I think they've only missed one bowl game since then. Yeah. We were you know, when we're on the yard, we're recognized as the group that started it all. And it makes us feel special. It makes me feel special. I love it because it's like a baby that you birth and it goes off and matures and has a very successful career, you know? And so that's how we look at it. And it's been a blessing to see the coaches and see the program grow.
Absolutely.
Where we knew in that locker room, where we were 1-10, it could go. We knew it. We felt it. We understood that we just kept it together. If we didn't transfer out and fall apart, what could happen? And we all stick by those words. And it's just not fluff. We knew. And it's hard, you know, outsiders could probably be like, you didn't know. But if you were around the program, we were 1-10, you would know. If you go look at all those games, we were, besides a few, we were in the games. We were in, and we had, most of our team were freshmen, true freshmen. We were playing with young guys. And we were in the game. If you go back to that North Carolina game where they came to the house, they were number 6 or number 5 in the country. And they had 6 or 7 draft pick first rounders. We was in that game up to halftime. I mean, we played the crap out of those guys, and they just came out and took it to us in the third quarter. But it was several games like that along the way.
Yeah.
But all those games made us who we were by our senior year, and I believe that because of that and what we had to go through, these guys are who they are today. And obviously with Coach Patterson running the ship over there, and he's been through some battles with us. To get, you know, as well. So it's just been a beautiful story. I met my wife there. I got my psychology degree. Graduated in 4 years, had a 5-year scholarship. Started my master's with business in year 5. But the NFL draft and all that stuff got in the way, so I still need to go. I still owe some more time there to finish up, but I did start the process. But I'll tell everybody, man, I met my wife. Without football, without the game of football that I love so much, I would never have met my beautiful wife, had 4 beautiful kids. And I thank God for the opportunity that TCU has given me and the coaches. And it's just been a blessing ever since. And I'm glad to be part of the family.
Let me ask you a question. What was the team's reaction when Francione announced that he was going to Alabama? Did y'all just kind of go, ooh?
Well, we're split. We had a meeting. You know, if you, I don't know if people remember, understand our bowl game, we ran the show. We said we were mature enough as captains and leaders, as a handful of us, to where we ran our own practice. We could have bolted out of there and said enough and been to hit the bars and all that stuff, which we did, but we did after the fact. But we had practice. We held practice. We ran the clock. We did everything as we needed to do it. And we did it on our own, and we had captain step up, but we knew something was wrong that week because Francione had his phone on the practice field. He was doing things that were not him. He ran a tight ship, and as leader, we're like, he's on the phone at practice, like during practice, his cell phone.
That I can didn't hear make it any- now.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. All right. That doesn't make any sense.
No, I'm not. No.
Right, and so. You know, he was just doing things like that, and you know, we saw it, but we didn't pay any attention. And then when he did, when LT was in the Heisman, and that he wore that color, that
crimson tie.
You know, that was to me, and I'm a Francione fan. I've been down to visit with him, you know, a couple times. I he's a friend of mine, but that was a wrong move. I mean, that was sure. To me, that was a slap in the face, and I think he handled that poorly. I would say that, but LT's forgiven him. And you know, it's, you know, listen, I know a lot of TCU fans, it's, you know, they don't like him. Some do. I understood the business side of things. I've always understood the business side of football. I understood that early when behind closed doors, when you see a lot of people coming and going and you see the politics of the game, I knew right then and there, this is not just a fun game of football where you play football, they take your education. This is business. And there's millions of dollars around this business, even at this level. So I don't like the way Francione did it. Am I mad at him for doing it? No, because I understood he was losing 18 seniors. He needed to rebuild this program, which he did, and he needed to go win the national title. And at the time, he was not going to do that. So I understood that. Coach Patterson, on the other hand, he hadn't built what Coach Francione has built. Coach Fran was known as changing programs and doing this thing, not Coach Patterson. Coach Patterson hadn't proven anything yet besides he's a good defense coordinator. Now, because he was left a jewel, I will say that he's done his thing, and I think he's done things Coach Francione would have never done at TCU, and that's just the bottom line. And so I think it was right for the occasion. I think he should have went on and Coach Fran did whatever he was going to do. I'm glad that Coach Patterson got the opportunity, and that's why we went our senior class to fight, walk in AD's office, take petition, say, hey, this is the guy. Coach Patterson is your guy. You have to hire this man. And there was, again, I've already said this on the record, that there are other coaches who want us to vote for him, but we did not. We told them they're not a good fit. to be the head coach of that university. There was only one man for the job, and that was Coach Patterson.
Well, that's good. You know, Phil Bennett wanted that job, too.
We know. And yeah, I like Bennett. I think Bennett's a good guy, but Bennett was not – we had guys who wanted to leave, like literally leave because of Bennett, and one was my roommate at the time. So, Bennett, it just – you gotta – it's hard. When I say this, you're going to be like, what? But even with how hard Patterson is, with what you guys see and what we all see, you know, on camera and stuff like that, he has a relationship with his team on the field and off the field. Like, he gets them, and the guys get him. Bennett, he was like kind of one way. People wasn't feeling him off the field. He didn't know how to build those relationships with the team. Hmm. And so we under Bennett, we had several people leave. And I remember those times, that's when those were the revolving door kind of thing. It was like, man, people are coming and going. But he just didn't, you have to be, everyone can be a head coach. That's the reason why he's a DC. I mean, that's the reason why he's doing what he's doing, and nobody's really giving him that chance. So it is what it is, but he was one of them.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think that part of the story, both aspects, the fact that LT forgave Fran, and Fran leaving opened up the door to where we are today.
Sure.
No doubt about it. But yeah, the other aspect of that story being that you as a team, as a group of leaders, kind of paved the way to get Gary Patterson into that head coaching position.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that a lot of TCU fans aren't aware of, because it's not a story that's told very often. Because you guys are a very humble group. I mean, all you guys are from that era. And you know, it's great to hear the stories, but it's definitely a very, very poignant footnote in the history of TCU football that you guys stepped up the way you guys did and basically said, this is our guy. This is the guy you need to hire for the head coaching position.
Yeah. We did. Aaron Schobel, Curtis Fuller, LT, myself, Sean Worthen. I'm probably missing a couple guys, but we were the leadership council and the captains, and we went to bat. We petitioned. I mean, literally names on paper, and we said, this is our guy. And I think they might have interviewed one person or something like that. It wasn't a lot of guys. And I think within a week or two, Patterson got that job. We wanted him to coach our senior game, and we appointed him as our head coach for that game. Uh-huh. And so, the rest is history.
Yeah.
Hyman was the athletic director at that time.
He was.
So I think between Hyman and Ferrari, who was the chancellor.
Yeah.
I think it speaks highly of them that they actually listened to what you guys had to say, took stock in the fact that you guys said, Gary Patterson's our guy.
Yeah.
And followed through on that, because that speaks volumes of the leadership that we had at TCU, which, again, everything kind of had to come together at that point, right?
Yeah, right.
Fran had to leave. Patterson had to be okay with taking, you know, not going with Fran, because Fran always took him wherever he went. And you had to have the leadership at TCU, both the athletic director and the chancellor, sign off on the fact that this is an unproven guy who's going to take over this particular program, which is kind of on the rise, and we need somebody to kind of lead us through what we like to all call, you know, our 40 years in the wilderness, so to speak, our period of time there where we're traveling from, you know, it's one that needs to be told, especially to the younger alumni who don't quite know it.
Yeah, they don't understand what it's like to sit in the stands and watch Texas beat you 81-16.
Oh.
You know, for like the 14th year in a row. I mean, I remember those dark days, and it was pretty sad. Yep. But Francione turned it around. And you're missing some of the other candidates. Well, I mean, I know who a couple of the other candidates were. That, and we're lucky we didn't take them. One of them was Guy Morris, who was at Kentucky at the time, and a former TCU offensive lineman. And I know the backstory about that. I'm not sure the guy that told it to me would appreciate me saying it, but thank God we didn't get him. He lasted, 2 years at Baylor? And now I think he's out of coaching altogether. And then the other guy was, they interviewed that guy. It was a Southern Miss, Jeff.
That's right.
Yep.
The Golden Eagles.
Yep. Yep. And he was kind of a hot coach at the time.
Oh, yeah. They beat us in that one time where we thought we were going to bust the BCS.
Yep.
Yeah. You're right. Before Boise got a chance to do it. Sorry to bring that up there.
Yeah, no doubt.
But, you know, we dodged a bullet with those other two guys. We absolutely – they hit the center of the target when they hired Gary Patterson and made him the head coach, because that was the right guy at the right time and the right job.
Really was.
There's no doubt in my mind that we are not who we are today if things didn't fall into place the way they did. You know, we say all that, but again, keep in mind we're losing 18 seniors. Who's going to come in and you know, that doesn't know anything about the players, don't know anything about the program besides what they've seen. Plus, keep in mind, guys, we just got through proving to people maybe 4 or 5 years ago that we can do certain things even after all these years of winning. So it's just one of those deals where it just everything fell into place. And I'm so glad it happened because we are who we are today because of it.
Yep.
Amen. Yep. All right, Ryan. Sorry to make you follow all of that.
I know. I was like, oh, crap, Sean.
Oh, you got it. You were part of those stories too, though.
I was a little bit a part of that. Yeah, a little bit older. But my senior year at TCU was Shannon's first year. So that 10-1 season was my last.
1-10.
I mean, sorry, God, yeah, you really want to reverse that one in your head. 1-10 season felt like we won the national championship that day. But So that was, I was a cheerleader at TCU on the co-ed squad, and that game, I still remember that game, and it was pretty amazing, but that was our only win that year. And, you know, for a cheerleader, traveling to the away games is so much fun. We had a lot of great conferences that we were in during those years, and but I never got to cheer at a bowl game. So that was always kind of a regret that I never had that opportunity. But since then, obviously, we've been to a lot of bowl games, and I have been a part of that as a fan, which is pretty special as well. TCU was expensive back then too. Not quite as expensive as it is this day, but the dollar was a little bit, the exchange rate's a little bit different. But so my mom actually worked there in the football department for Coach Sullivan and Coach Fran for a little while. And so I got to go there because of that. And my mom went to OU and my dad went to Alabama. So I always grew up being a huge Alabama fan. And I was a gymnast growing up and I always wanted to be a part of their gymnastics team. But my dad said that school is way too big. And so I ended up applying to TCU and got in. So I, like many of us, I was in Colby Dorm. That was the fun dorm to be in, it seems like, back then. And I think it's still around today for sure.
Yes.
And I pledged Kappa Kappa Gamma. And I lived in the house for my sophomore, junior, and senior years. And then my major was interior design. So I lived in that lab for much. While everybody was having a great junior and senior year, we were all in that lab for, I mean, almost 24/7. Everybody thinks design's like tossing pillows and picking out paint colors, but it wasn't. So it was kind of that might be the only thing I would change if I went back to TCU. I might not. Well, you know what? I'd still do it the same because I made so many great friends.
Well, hold on. So what is interior design involve if it's not picking out throw pillows and
I know, right? Well, it's actually architecture to a level. So it was odd. I mean, we just got email, I think, right at our senior year. We were kind of in that technical transition. So the first couple of years in the major, we were doing architectural drawings like the old people did, you know, on the draft boards with the T-square. Sorry.
Like the old people.
I'm a part of that generation, apparently, too, since we were doing it. But
not talking about you, Wes. Not talking about
you. We had the T-squares and the rulers and just
the drafting tables.
Oh my gosh, the drafting tables. We had our art bins that we hauled to class every day. I mean, it was just, everything was by hand and it took forever. And I'm telling you, if you messed up, you had to throw it all away and start over, even if you were 40 hours into that drawing, that draft. So by my senior year, we had gotten AutoCAD and started learning that. So it was a rough transition into the real world because the real world was on all that stuff, and we had only had about a year in it. But it was fun. I still actually my best friends are from my design class today. The ones I stay in touch with the most are actually like Zabette and Kristen was my sorority sister, but she was a design major as well. So what got me to TCU, it was Young Life. I had a lot of Young Life leaders in high school that were, you know, Kappas and Kios and DGs and a couple of them were cheerleaders, and I loved them. I thought they were the neatest girls I'd ever met, and I decided I want to be just like them and come to TCU. So that's how I got there. I did the study abroad program in Scotland with my design class and geology, Donovan's class, and then did a stint in Mexico for a couple weeks during the school year with the design class. So that was really neat. And then I got my master's in liberal arts in 2006. And actually, Sean, we have our 20th class reunion this year.
Congratulations.
Awesome.
You're coming. I hope I get this right. I need to look it back up. I think it's at the Witherspoon Distillery. So it's whiskey. I mean,
oh, is it? Oh, well, I'm there.
I mean, that's a no-brainer, right?
It's a no-brainer.
Yeah, that should be fun. So that was no-brainer. That was my. I was there for 4 years. I got in and out in 4 years. That was the deal with my parents, and so I did that. And the rest is history. I'm just obviously a massive fan to this day. There's just something very, very special about that school. And Donati, we can get into this later on. If you listen to episode 100, he talks about that when he visited TCU. And I think all of us have felt that way the first time we walked on campus, even back in the 90s when it was not nearly as beautiful as it is now. So.
I remember the 90s.
Yeah.
last good now, decade for me.
All you, Sean. Tell us about your life at TCU.
My story's boring. I don't have much of a story. So I almost went to Texas.
Oh.
Oh, well, if you're going to start it that way.
I don't think you told us that.
Well, Ryan, you'll remember the game against Texas in 94?
Yeah.
Where they beat us at home.
Yeah.
I was there.
Yeah.
Dressed in burnt orange. Yes. So let me explain. Let me back up real quick. So I was an all-state musician in high school, saxophone player, both all-state jazz, all-state concert. So I was going to go to school on a music scholarship.
Yeah.
And I had offers at Michigan and Texas and Baylor. So I didn't like Baylor for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Michigan was way too cold.
Yeah.
So I was planning on going to Texas. So back in 94, when Texas came in town, played TCU. Unfortunately, if I remember correctly, I think they beat us. it was an opportunity for me to kind of meet with a lot of my old high school buddies who went to Texas. And I got to basically be in the Texas band for the game. You know, got to march in with the band, got to be on, you know, the field at halftime, and got to cheer along with the band, and did the whole thing that you normally would when you're getting ready to go to Texas.
Cool.
So that summer, I went down to Texas for one of the big music camps that they had, and met the saxophone teacher for the first time. Biggest jerk I had ever met in my entire life.
Oh.
Just from meeting him alone, I went back and I told my parents, I'm like, I can't spend a week with this guy. There's no way I can spend 4 years studying underneath him. He had the biggest ego on him. That was anybody like him in my entire life. And it wasn't like he was some nationally renowned, you know, saxophone player that earned that right to be that way.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it was terrible. Plus, everywhere you go on that campus, you're walking uphill. And I don't know if you know, but back then they wanted me to play baritone saxophone, which is a fairly large instrument.
Yeah.
And it's a fairly heavy instrument. And walking from the freshman dorms on the campus of University of Texas to the music building, they didn't have Uber back then. You know, I mean, that's not something you could have done. And so I was just like, you know what, I'm going to look around and see what else I have. But I talked to Kurt Wilson over at TCU, who was the head of the jazz program forever. And he said, come in, audition. We'll see, you know, we'll see what we can do. It rest, as they say, is history. So I was able to get a scholarship at TCU at almost the last second.
Wow.
So originally I was going to go to Texas, or if I didn't get that, I was going to take the Michigan thing and go up to Michigan and freeze my butt off.
Freeze your butt off. Yeah,
absolutely. Which I don't do snow.
You'd been walking through snow instead of uphill. Or maybe
both ways.
Both ways.
Barefooted. Yes.
With whiskey in your jacket for sure.
Yeah. Well, I didn't drink. I was just a lonely high school student.
You would have.
I probably would have drove me to drinking, sure.
So what was one of the neatest moments at TCU being in the band that you can remember? I'm sure you have several, but.
Wow. Probably the neatest moment for me was meeting my wife the very first day, the very first class at TCU, my freshman year.
Wow.
There you go.
That was my neatest thing. So I get to TCU and I had to take a kind of a basic music theory class because my high school director didn't teach us squat. So first day of class, it was 8 a.m. music theory. I'm sitting there. I'm commuting at this time because I didn't get in early enough to get into the dorm. So I'm commuting from home. And I get there early. In walks my wife about 2 minutes late to class with another girl that she met in the dorms. Now, my wife is from San Antonio. And she's a first-generation American. Both her parents are from Mexico. And she met probably one of the only other Hispanics in her dorm at the time. We were in Brownsville. So they walk in, and they sit down right in front of me, and they loudly speak Spanish to each other the entire class. And the professor at that time was one of those kind of mousy professors who you couldn't hear unless there was it was absolute silence. So like the very first day of class, I couldn't hear anything. I was so pissed at her the first day of class. So it proceeded that way for the next couple of weeks until we had to have study groups for the big exam. And sure enough, who needed help studying?
Right.
Yeah. But so, yeah, we met first day, became friends, started dating late in my sophomore year, got married right before we graduated.
Wow.
And, yeah. So we just celebrated our 19th wedding anniversary.
Hey, happy anniversary, brother.
Yeah.
And so we've had two kids, but I mean, that was probably the best moment of being in the band. Outside of that, playing at Carnegie Hall,
playing
in the Sun Bowl, being there when we beat Oklahoma, in Oklahoma.
We've done that a few times, haven't we?
We have. But that was that one year. We got pelted with empty beer bottles.
Yeah.
It was like Philadelphia Eagle fans out there. It was terrible.
The classic.
Absolutely terrible. But it was fun.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, I mean, probably my favorite memory back then during the band was probably also the Sun Bowl, because Shannon, as much as the football team disrespected you guys all week, the band and the fans disrespected anybody who was wearing purple all week long.
Well, I forget about that. I'm pretty sure you guys talk about disrespect. Their band is like the stuff, right? So
yeah, it's worse than the Stanford band.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Didn't think about that.
Yeah, it was bad. I mean, it was all week long. I think everybody from TCU got it from every possible angle for anyone who was wearing Trojan gear.
Yeah.
And but it was worth it in the end.
But the payback on ABC.
It really was. So no, I went to school. I got a degree in music education. Nothing really fancy, but like Ryan said, we were kind of in that time period where we were on the cusp of technology. So I actually worked for Tandy while I was at TCU as a technician and started learning web programming, all that kind of stuff. So by the time I got out of TCU, I had my own web design business and was designing websites for Fortune 500 companies. And I was freelance for several years, was asked by Dallas Community College to come in and teach an entire several courses in multimedia design, did that for 2 years. Got a full-time gig doing that at Tarrant County College. I've been in Tarrant County now for 11 years. So, yeah. But
that's cool.
TCU is where it started.
You bet.
I got another question for you. So we could probably have a whole podcast on just the pranks that bands play on each other alone. Of course, my favorite one is when the band, SMU band, dropped Winter Ride.
The Ride Seeds.
So funny. So do you remember any pranks that y'all played on each other, maybe that we never heard about? Or do you need time to think about this?
Man. There were a couple things that were done to the A&M band.
maybe that we can't actually verbalize on a podcast.
I don't want to own up to anything.
That's a good point. Yeah. All right. Fair enough.
But yeah, we had our fair share of fun. Plus we were part of that time. If you go back and for you young alumni, there was this thing called the TV Guide. And
it came every Sunday.
It kind of explained to you what was going to be on TV all week long. There was no such thing as an online guide. So they had a section called Cheers and Jeers. And one week we actually won Jeers for the most obnoxious band in college football.
Good job.
We did. And we earned that.
What were some of the qualifications for that title?
Let's just say our cheering section, we had a very very witty group of guys that were very loud, very vocal, and especially when we're playing at Eamon Carter, because they put us right behind the visiting team.
That's smart. Yes.
And there were several times I remember during my time where we got a player, we got a visiting player so riled up, he wanted to come into the stands and fight us.
Wow.
And that was kind of our badge of honor. It was like, if we could get him so off his game.
Wow.
To come up and try to fight a bunch of band nerds.
You're a little bit free to say it.
It's a good day.
That's funny. So, hey, you know what I just recently, that reminded me, y'all getting that award. I don't know if this is, I read it on Twitter, so I'm sure it's true, but but that TCU just won from, I guess they just got the title from Playboy magazine of the best, one of the best party schools.
Really?
I know. I was shocked. I was kind of proud too. You know, it's one of those.
Yeah. So Shannon, Texas Wesleyan is looking pretty good right now, right?
Right. Right. Yes. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt about it. Well, I know that they're ranked every year with beautiful people. I know Playboy or whatever has done. Yep. Whatever for years now, and I know we have we're always ranked one or two in the top five with whatever.
Well, they actually forbid one of our co-eds from even being in that issue that they had. Mm-hmm. That was a big thing back when we were there. They were having the spread of I don't know, co-eds across the country or whatever it was. And that was a big thing on campus. I remember everyone talking about that, and the administration was like, "You will not do this."
Right.
Yeah. I remember that. Wow. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Huh, times have changed.
Right, no doubt.
I don't know, party school now? I don't, maybe not so much.
Yeah. Maybe. Wow.
Yeah.
Party school. Maybe the best tailgating team there is, but I don't know about the, you know.
We're pretty tame. We had fun, but.
I have a blast tailgating.
Yeah. Yeah. I tell you what, TCU tailgating has evolved dramatically.
It's a four-star show, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big show within itself. I mean, we could get a lot of great footage out of tailgating, which we do.
Well, I tell you what, let's use that as a segue into one of the things we want to talk about, which is just kind of getting back to the episode 100, when we had a discussion interview with Athletic Director Jeremiah Donati, and that was one of the topics we talked about. And we didn't get a chance to really discuss this after the podcast, but let's talk about some of the things he talked about during that interview. One of the things was moving Frog Alley because of the east side construction. And that was something that I hadn't really heard a lot of people talk about, but apparently they're going to be moving that. If you remember last year, they started doing those kind of like, I don't know, catered tailgating area right in front of the Schollmeyer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, apparently that's where they're going to put Frog Alley now. So I don't know where they're putting that catered tailgating.
They call it Tent City or something.
Yeah.
Tent City. It's going to move towards the front of Frog statue.
Maybe. Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how they work that out. And then they're going to switch, which I'll be sad because our tailgate is usually where the bus comes in, both buses, the away team and TCU. And we always stand there and wave, and it's fun. But now
it's moving off University.
Yes, which is a better place for it. I agree. And then they're going to walk in at the front of the stadium, which will be really really beautiful, actually. So look forward to that this year. And they moved the frog to the front of the stadium, so they'll all get to touch the frog when they walk by. Trying to think.
You know, I'll be honest with you, I think that's a much better area.
I do,
for
too.
For Frog Alley and for
makes
the walk.
Yeah.
Wes, Shannon, what do you guys think?
Well, I wasn't there for the Donati show, but, you know, it sounds intriguing. I like to see how they work all that out with Frog Alley, but I'm sure they've got a good plan in place, and it'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm just trying to visually think, because I got the map of it in my head, and I'm trying to think how that would work. But I'm sure they're going to figure it out. I mean, it ain't going to stop the show. I mean, our fans are going to show up. We're going to show up and do what we do best, and that's support our Frogs. So, you know, maybe a little hiccup. You know, it's a growth issue, right? I mean, it's stadium's going to be, I mean, just beautiful when they're done with it. So, it's not a negative. I think we'll work it out. But I tell you what, people are going to show up, show out, and do what we do best, and that's get ready to support them Frogs by kickoff.
You got it, brother.
Well, one of the other things that we talked about with Donati was this transfer rule. And Shannon, I'm really curious to hear what you think about this. So the NCAA has made a change. Right. For those of you who haven't heard about this, just real quick summary. The transfer rule has now changed to where a student no longer needs to have permission to transfer, at least out of conference. Conferences can still make rules as far as interconference transfers, but they no longer have to go to a coach to get permission to at least start the transfer process. They just have to go to the administration and say, I want to transfer. And within 48 hours, the school has to put their name on a list of possible transfers. And then they're open to be communicated to by any coach across the country. Shannon, what do you think about this change?
Well, it's some good and bad. First thing that comes to mind is you're going to have disagreements with players and coaches, right?
Right.
I just feel if they're not careful, and this decision may open up the gate door for this a little bit, for things not to get worked out between player coach when they come up. And you guys know sometimes it's hard things. I mean, especially after dealing with last year, some of the stuff we've heard, lawsuits, and then, you know, we've had these talks several episodes ago. When you don't have to go knock on the head coach's door, defense coordinator's door, and work out an issue that you might have had at practice or whatever the case may be, and you can now just say, you know what, I didn't like what you said to me. I'm not getting any playing time anyway, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to go knock on this door, you know, start the process. And here's the deal. Say you are getting playing time. Say you just button heads, but now you're a very key piece to our program, and all of a sudden you're out and nobody knew about it. I mean, I don't know what, and I don't know how much the administration has to be upfront with the coaching staff at the, like, as soon as they hear about it. I don't know the player privacy code. I'm not sure if there is one, I don't know, but to me, that's one of the negatives I see that could happen versus, you know, you speaking to coaches, parents coming in, you having to go through it a different way and then taking it to the school or a coach granting you your release. If a player coach is really a player coach and he's about his program and the kid second, if a kid wants out, I would think doing it the right way, that coach will let the player out. I just think and see how this could get kind of sideways if it's not handled in the right spirit on how kids could now kind of take matters in their own hands without letting coaches know and do their own thing. With that being said, I'm glad the players have a voice, though. I'm glad a player can now, you know, and I think you got to handle that responsibility in a manner of respect. Because again, I've always wanted to, I don't believe in burning bridges. If I leave something, I want to make sure I'm in good spirits with that person, that school, that university. So when I do move on or something happens, then you're going to give me you're going to say, hey, just one a fit here. Great kid, respectful kid, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, there's some pros and cons to it on both sides. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, I'm sure we may find out this year.
Yeah.
You know, kids not getting playing time. So, you know, something's going to go. I mean, I'm sure this is going to be exercised probably sooner than later, in my opinion. So, you know, I hadn't thought all the way through until it happens. And I'd like to know all the rules behind it. Like, what's the true 1, 2, 3 steps of how this works? But initially, that's my first thought with just when I heard, I thought about it and then thinking on it tonight. So.
Let me ask. So, Sean, you're saying basically if a player wants to transfer, he just lets the administration know. They put
Correct.
Him on a list and then make that list available to other schools.
Yeah. So basically, there's going to be like a national registry.
So it's almost kind of like a waiver wire in baseball. You check out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I don't know how that list is going to be handled as far as public knowledge or whether it's only going to be available to NCAA coaches. I'm sure people that are on that list, if it's only available to coaches, it'll leak out. The press will find out. They'll post information at some point in time. But I don't know. I didn't check to see if that list is going to be publicly available. But yes, they have to basically, the administration, within 48 hours of being notified by a player that they want to transfer, that player's name has to be put on that particular list. And then that list is available to all coaches across the country. Again, though, conferences can make their own rules as far as transfer within conference. So the situation, basically what this would do, if you remember a couple years back, LSU prevented an offensive lineman from transferring to TCU.
Right.
And this goes to the heart of that particular matter. So player goes to the head coach at that time at LSU and says, I want to transfer to TCU. LSU goes, we don't like TCU. We're the better purple team. You can't go there. I'm paraphrasing. That's not exactly what it was saying.
Yeah.
You get the idea. And so that was an out-of-conference transfer. Well, before this rule, you had to get the okay by the coach to even have a possibility of transfer. That's out the door now. So now you don't have to get permission to put your name on the list to transfer out of the conference. Now, if you want to, if another school in conference wants to pick you up, the conference has the ability to say, you know, based on our bylaws and our rules, you know, we're not allowing players to transfer from like Alabama to Auburn, as an example.
I don't know. I look at this, it's like a divorce. You know, you're divorcing yourself from that school, and I think you ought to give it every opportunity to work it out before you make that decision and pull this trigger and leave. You
know? Well, but again, we're talking about 18, 19, 20-year-olds.
Yeah, I know, but in my previous seven marriages, you know, I am.
That number keeps fluctuating, Wes.
but, you know, seriously, you ought to try and work it out. I mean, Shannon was right. You ought to go to the coach and say, what am I doing wrong or why am I not playing more? I mean, lay out a plan for me and try and work it out. But, you know, sometimes you can't do that. Irreconcilable differences, I guess. But
I mean, I think we all know how some of these players are going to treat this.
Sure, Ryan.
And Ryan, you have experience with coaching kids and young adults. How do you think, especially with this group of younger athletes that you've coached as far as gymnastics goes, how do you see them being able to handle that sort of responsibility?
Oh, gosh. It's all going to come down on how they were parented. I mean, unfortunately, everything does. How all the kids are acting these days, it comes down to how they handle these situations in their own home. So you're going to have a group of kids that has good character and will go to their coach, maybe not the head coach necessarily, but their direct coach and have a conversation. And then from there, go to whoever they go to on campus to do this process. And then you're going to have the kids that can't look anybody in the eye and sit down and have an adult conversation, and they're just going to go the backdoor route and leave. And you know what? That's fine. If that's we probably don't want that type of character on the team anyway, because they're not a team player. They're not acting. They're being somewhat selfish. And like you said, not you don't always get to a school and it's not exactly what you thought it was going to be, or maybe the coach leaves. You know, there's always going to be reasons, financial reasons, that family reasons that you may need to leave, and all those reasons are completely fine. But it's how you leave, like Shannon was saying. People can leave. It's how you leave, and I think it all comes down to parenting. And behind that, then it's going to come down to do the coaches respect the players, and do the players respect the coaches? And then it's going to be you know, the coaching staff and the school. You know, how much respect is there? You know, if the kid comes straight to this. Who do they go to? I keep saying the school, but you know who I'm talking about. I don't know.
Administration.
Yeah. They go to the administration. Hopefully there's an unwritten rule that you follow. And I imagine different schools will have this set up that, you know, the first thing out of their mouth is, well, have you sat down with your coach? This is a big decision. And they counsel them through this. These are teaching moments for these kids. Yeah. Don't just say, okay, checkbox. Now we're going to get you out of here. They can leave, but let's counsel them and figure out maybe if this is a problem. You don't want to teach these kids, as soon as you have a problem, leave, because then they're going to leave jobs, they're going to quit teams, they're going to quit their marriage, friendships, and all of that. So,
yeah, I think we all hope coaches are like Gary Patterson. I mean, he takes a direct kind of approach with almost a parenting kind of a role with a lot of his students and a lot of the athletes that are under him. And I think that 48-hour grace period, I think, is a perfect opportunity to kind of give them a little bit of life coaching and just kind of introspective kind of, okay, well, what exactly went on here? And hopefully the students aren't very standoffish about that. If the institutions want to do that,
yeah.
But I would think that's a smart play. If I were an administrator, I would certainly implement that kind of a rule.
I would too. Definitely. You don't want to make any life decision like that. And it is a life decision that will put them on a different path in their life. They're going to marry someone differently, probably. They're going to have a different job coming out of school more than likely, because they're going to change their whole setting. So you don't want to make any of those big decisions based on emotion.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it's I've seen it be truly like a divorce. I've seen guys go off and get a second chance at it and do really well and make it work. But I've also seen guys go and was out of that relationship or that situation just as fast as they left. Mm-hmm. So, which speaks probably to their character as well. But you have to be serious about why you're leaving. And the reason needs to be serious why you go knock on that advisor's door and say, hey, I think I want to, you know, take my talents or whatever to another university or whatever the case may be. So, again, it'd be interesting to hear from even Coach Patterson's standpoint what his thoughts is on it. I'd like to get a little bit more information myself on it to see what other steps for really is it easier than we're making it, or is it a lot harder than we're making it? And it's just like you just can't knock on our door and say, "Hey, I'm out of here," and that's that. So, I'd like to see what happens and how that process works. But again, it's change. I mean, that's letting me know we may get a little bit closer to athletes getting paid, guys.
Well, that is a topic for another show. Ryan just laid out her opinion.
Throw that twist out there.
I will tell you this.
The NFL.
I knew who I would get a reaction from.
Yeah.
But change is good, you know. Just sometimes we got to see what happens, you know, and it out. We'll see. You know, it can be a positive situation for kids, and you know, maybe they'll use their voice in the right manner, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I know. The initial reaction from Coach Patterson was that he was not for it. He was not for this particular change, and I'm sure on the surface, a lot of people saw that and thought, you know, he's not going to bat for his players. But I think a lot of that has to do with he knows the character of a lot of these kids, and he knows how a lot of these kids, when they come in, they don't get playing time immediately, and that can immediately kind of snowball into somebody deciding, if I don't get playing time immediately, I'm out of here, kind of a situation. But I'd love to interview him and get his thoughts on that a little bit later. And I'm sure that's going to be one of the topics of media day coming up here soon.
Well, you know, something else to add to that is, you know, they always talk about recruiting. We got into a little bit of this with Donati as well. I mean, these kids make decisions to go play football at 18 based on the school color, school mascot, how cool their uniforms are, how cool the locker room is, what the team gets. I mean, there's so many things that at 18 years old can pull you to a program or not. And you're not always looking at 4 years down the road, or how do the coaches coach, what's the team dynamic? I mean, you let some materialistic things maybe cloud your judgment. And, you know, these kids, which is it, Oregon that has all the crazy uniforms? They have a different uniform every game, you know. And then A&M, God, their locker room, you know, for baseball and football is amazing. And so,
yeah, but you got to be an Aggie.
I know, that's true. So, sorry. But so, you know, that coaches have a hard time. I mean, the big deal at TCU is our school colors are purple and white, but our players wear black mostly because they want to wear black because it makes them feel mean and tough and they look tougher. And so there's little bitty things like that we alumni, I do especially get my feathers ruffled with things like that, but they mean a lot to these players and the music that they play at the games and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It all adds up and it can sway players to want to be somewhere else. So.
Right. And I know we're saying football, but it's all sports. And I wonder if that takes away, you know, I'd like to get their opinion on a lot from all the coaches, but you know, it just kind of takes away that open door policy thing too. Mm-hmm. You know, when a coach says I have an open door policy and come knock on my door, let's talk this through, you know, and whatever. But to me, that just takes that away, because they may have it, but now they have another door they can walk through if they don't want to walk through your door.
Yeah.
And I think everything should flow through the head coach's office, whether the player goes or a coach the player goes to their position coach, and that position coach walks him over, or he goes. But I think everything – I'm a little old school about that. I think everything should run through the head coach and then make a decision from there, because I've got to believe that the head man is going to be do what's best for his school, but also do what's best for the student athlete. Sure. And that's all head coaches. So I'm going to lean that way when it comes to that piece of it.
And with the rule, they get to transfer no matter what. So hopefully the school will implement a rule that says, your coach got you here on scholarship. He did a huge favor for you, and you owe him the respect to go to him first, and then we'll start the paperwork. No big deal. So hopefully we'll see that.
It'll certainly change the dynamic of a lot of coaching staffs. That's for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The ones that aren't player-centric, that are more program-centric. I'm the king of this mountain, and my word is law, so to speak. I think a lot of those coaches are going to have a rougher time with this particular ruling than some of the other coaches that we know are more player-centric, like Patterson as an example, Sabian, those kind of guys. But overall, I think it's a like you said, Shannon, it's the players get a voice, and I think that's always a good thing. But it's going to be interesting this season to see how it plays out. Yeah. Well, we are an hour in. I did one real quick thing. I do want to get everybody's reaction on the story that Donati told us at the end of episode 100 about TCU getting into the Big 12 when he went down to Austin with Chris Del Conte, unannounced, cold called DeLoss Dodds, and convinced him to get us into the Big 12. What did you guys think about that story?
My favorite part was that Donati had to keep moving the car around campus to keep from getting a ticket or towed. And then after several hours of doing that, he gets a call from I've already wiped his name from my memory. Because
he who shall not be now. Named.
From the equivalent of the Fort Worth Club in Austin. They're there drinking and talking.
Yeah, at 4:30 and it's not even open. Yeah.
Donati's still trying to drive the car around campus and keep it parked. And my second favorite part of that story was, other than Donati saying that he almost ran the car off the highway when he said, "What time's our appointment?" And he said, "We don't have one." And, that's really hilarious. But is when he got there, Dodd said, I've heard plenty from him. I want to hear from you, Donati. I wanted to ask him in that interview what he said, but I figured, if he wanted to tell us what he said.
We were out of time. We were already over.
So maybe we'll save that for another time, but I would love to know what he said.
I think it's funny because DeLoss Dodds never got Del Conte's name right. He called him Del.
Yes.
Chris. So I think the first name was Dell and the last name was Connie. So, and I've heard that story a number of times and from Chris O'Connie himself, but he kept calling him, "Well, hey, Dell, so what's going on? What are you going to get your paperwork in?" And he said, "No, it's Chris." Yeah.
So. Yeah, very next sentence. Okay, Dell. So what?
Right, exactly. Exactly. Hey, Dell.
Yeah. And now Del Conte is there as their AD. And Donati's ours. It's crazy. It was kind of.
I wouldn't turn down $1.3 million either. So
no, you can't blame him.
I tell you, of that entire story, the very end of it, when he was explaining, when Donati was explaining to us on this trip back to Fort Worth after that meeting, had this fantastic meeting with DeLoss Dodds. And then afterwards, as Donati was telling us that he still talks with Del Conte constantly. And Del Conte's calling him up and saying, "Hey, how did we do this at TCU? What was it?" They've got such a great relationship that goes way back, predates TCU. And I think that was one of the things that a lot of Frog fans, when they got over the initial shock of Del Conte, donning a burnt orange tie instead of a purple tie, which, by the way, Donati got all of his purple ties, which was nice. I think one nice thing that a lot of Frog fans pointed out is that, certainly Del Conte is going to do what's best for Texas first, obviously. Paid by Texas. Job. But we do have a very powerful AD in our corner. If the chance arises and there's another crazy conference carousel, that Donati could pick up the phone and instead of having to drive down to Austin and cold call Del Conte, he can actually just pick up the phone and go, "Hey, Chris, Right. Let me tell you why TCU needs to be in.
No. Hey, Dale. Let me tell you.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Sean. Very good point. Yeah, he said that their families are really, really close, and that's pretty, it's pretty neat to hear. So, because
it really is. Well, I think we're just a little over an hour long, so I think we'll end it here. If you guys don't mind, is there anything else you guys wanted to talk about tonight?
No.
No, I might just talk. Thanks to Shannon, Jack Hasselbrock's going to join us next Monday. We'll share these on Monday, but you'll hear it on Tuesday. Looking forward to having him on. Anybody who knows him loves him. So.
Yeah.
Jack holds a perfect distinction for those of you that don't know. Shannon, correct me if I'm wrong. He is the only non-letterman in TCU history be accepted into the Letterman's Club.
Yeah, Hall of Fame. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's
it's
huge.
It's a big deal.
Big deal. Jack's my guy. Love him to death.
Yeah, that didn't tell you anything about Jack. I mean, the guy is phenomenal.
Solid. Yeah. Solid as a rock.
Yeah. 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 Solid earth. But good guy. He's looking forward to doing it. And he was a little tired tonight. He's, you know, had some medication for his eye, but he's definitely told me to, you know, look forward to doing it next week. So
good.
Stay tuned, everybody. Going to be a good
Absolutely.
Show.
Absolutely.
Well, with that, we'll call it a night. We do want to wish everybody a happy 4th of July and hoping
be
you
safe.
Yeah. Be safe. Eat some good barbecue. Have a nice drink or two, or Wes will come over and make you a couple martinis.
Yeah. We can do that too.
Yeah. And so with that, we want to thank everybody who's listening to us. You can reach the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher, pretty much everywhere podcasts are found. You can also find us on killthefrogs.com. Don't forget to find the latest frog news on frogswire.com. And with that, we are out of here. Want to thank everybody for listening to us again. Have a safe and happy 4th of July.
Yes.
With that, we come to the end of the podcast. It's the time where we all get the frogs up and we get to say...
Go frogs.
There you go, Gary.
I like it. All right.
You guys have a safe one now.
Have a good one, guys.